98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
So what we do at the halfway point of the Burns and Gambo show, we stop, hit the reset button, and get you caught up on everything that's going on in the world of sports. It's called the 4 o'clock reset, and this is where you get our takes on everything that's going on. We start with Major League Baseball. Tonight, the winner-take-all Game 5 of the National League Divisional Series between the 107-win San Francisco Giants and the 106-win LA Dodgers. The winner advances to play the Braves in the NLCS. Atlanta won 88 games this year.
Yeah. The Dodgers taking a gamble here, going with Corey Kniebel in the opener instead of Julio Urias, who was supposed to start. So they kind of make this move because they didn't want the Giants to just load up on right-handed bats, and they want to make them change. So kind of a calculated decision by Roberts in this game.
The expectation is that Urias will come in and pitch probably in the second inning, maybe just long enough to basically make Gabe Kapler commit to not an all right-handed lineup to counter the lefty. So a little bit of gamesmanship going on in this best of five tonight. The two teams with the best two records in baseball, division rivals since the beginning of time, it feels like, playing a winner-take-all game five
tonight.
Interesting
that Kapler said that Roberts sent him a courtesy text message Wednesday night telling him of his change of plans. So they didn't just spring it on him.
Oh, I didn't hear about that, really?
Kapler said Roberts texted him and said, hey, I'm not going to pitch Urias. I'm going to go with an opener. And he didn't say why, but he told him what he was doing.
I had no idea about that. Fascinating. The Arizona Diamondbacks today claimed pitcher Zach Birdie off waivers.
From the team you want to get him from.
The Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah. That's great.
Kimbo notices during one of the breaks. Yeah. So let's see. One team had the worst record in baseball. The other team had the second worst record in baseball. Where are you getting a pitcher from? The team with the worst record in baseball.
Yeah. So a guy with an ERA of 5.40 this past year, a career ERA of 7.79. Okay. Let's fix that bullpen.
The St. Louis Cardinals today made a managerial change. Mike Schilt is out as manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. He led them to one of those two wild card spots, but they lost to the Dodgers in the one-game wild card play-in game. Yeah, the Cardinals,
damn them,
the hottest team in baseball over the last month and a half, but it was not enough to save his job.
Well, they said philosophical differences was the reason why they decided to part ways. I mean, they went on a great run, right? They were 17-game winning streak, made it to the playoffs, and philosophical differences, so they decided to part ways.
And the Coyotes, they're about to start their regular season. They're in Columbus tonight. Earlier today, they named three alternate captains, but no captains for this game tonight. Jay Beagle, Jacob Chychrun, and Andrew Ladd will all wear the A's tonight.
They'll wait to replace Shane Doan as captain until next year, until they have a better feeling if Chychrun's ready to do the job or not.
Yeah, we had the general manager, Bill Armstrong, earlier today. He made it very clear. It's an audition. We are auditioning, guys, to see who our next captain is going to be. We don't want to just give it away.
It's been a few years since they've had one, so.
And then, of course, Thursday night football tonight, Tampa Bay, the Buccaneers in Philly taking on the Eagles tonight is your Thursday night game.
Any chance the Eagles can win that game?
Oh, there's a chance.
I think but
not a good one. There's a chance. Yeah. Tom Brady's short week. He's a little dinged up, apparently. He's got finger injury, right?
You know? I would not be surprised if Philly wins that game.
That game's coming up a little later on tonight. But our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo show is what's going on with the state of the Cardinals ahead of this game against the Browns on Sunday. Today it was Dan Graziano, ESPN NFL insider, who reported the Cardinals now have three positive COVID-19 tests. A fourth would mean they'd have to go into a more intensive set of protocols around their headquarters. We know of the one, Chandler Jones, that was reported a couple of days ago. According to the report, the other two are two members of the staff. Now, that's all the report says. Two members of the staff. We don't know who. Graziano then followed up with a tweet and said, look, I don't want to alarm anybody about this. There's no chance they're not playing the game this weekend. No. This has happened to other teams this year, and there have been other teams that have had to go to the more intense level of, you know, requirements around the facility. It's just kind of one of those sock it away, something to know that there are three positives and they're one more away from having to go to a brand new level of how, you know, what the protocols are around the facility.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I remember back in June and July, the NFL warned teams it will forfeit games if, you know, and there were so many games, you know, last year, close calls and things like that. But you know, I think the NFL is, this is something that we're going to have to deal with. The NFL had warned teams that they'll forfeit games and players won't be paid if there's a COVID outbreak. So if there was an outbreak, you know, at that time, I think most of the teams only had like 50% of their players vaccinated. Now most of the teams vaccinated. So there was warnings of, oh, if there's an outbreak, you're going to forfeit the game and your players aren't going to get paid. And but most of the players in the league are vaccinated. Some teams have 100% vaccination
rates. The Arizona Cardinals say they have 100% vaccination rate. Here's Cliff Kingsbury from yesterday.
Just the way it goes. You know, we've been fully vaccinated now for a while, and unfortunate, particularly for Chandler, who was really playing at a high level, and hopefully he can, you know, get well rested and be back by next week's game. So we'll see how it plays out.
And since I butchered it, I want to make sure I'm absolutely clear about this.
Yeah.
This is the exact text, word for word, from Dan Graziano. Quote, to be clear, there is absolutely no indication that the Arizona-Cleveland game is in jeopardy. The Cardinals are not the first team this year to have multiple positives, nor would they be the first to go into the intensive protocols, close quote. And ESPN, they were talking about this about 45 minutes ago, and I meant to pull out my phone and take a picture of it because they put up on a graphic what the intensive protocols are.
I do that all the time. Take out my phone and...
Oh yeah,
just geographic, and I just like
just to,
I always get pissed off when it goes away, and then I got to rewind it. And
yeah, and I don't have the ability to rewind it in here, but I did catch enough of a glimpse at it to know it's like a reduction of the number of players that are allowed in the weight room, and it's where you, how often you wear the mask and where you wear the mask, and
if you get to four or more.
Again, okay. I didn't take a screenshot of it, so I don't have the exact details.
So they limit the amount of people that can go in a weight room.
Yeah, it's not a dramatic.
And meeting rooms and things like
that. Yeah, it's not a dramatic, oh my God, this is going to be so oppressive. It's just a slightly different, more intense way of doing things. That's not the only issue the Cardinals are dealing with from an injury standpoint. They got some good news today. The boys are back in town.
There you go. A little thin Lizzy. Yeah. Byron Murphy and Marco Wilson back. You know, two of your key cornerbacks. Murphy's been your number one guy all year. Missed last week's game. Marco Wilson missed last week's game. They still pulled off that win against the 49ers. Getting those guys back is big. I mean, because their secondary has been a real pleasant surprise. We're all concerned about the cornerback room, but a real pleasant surprise how well that those guys have played. But obviously getting those guys back is screwed because you don't want to... You know, you don't want to lose anybody for, like Rodney Hudson, right? Didn't play. He got injured, and then now he's not playing. And now he's, well, you hope you're not missing a guy for any long period of time. A week? Okay. You miss Murphy for a week. Marco for a week? Okay.
And Vance Joseph today, hopeful both of those guys can play at cornerback this weekend.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, both guys can go this week. It's early still. It's only Thursday, so we got two more days to kind of vet those guys and see where they are health-wise. But hopefully they are both ready to go on Sunday.
There were still a couple guys who didn't practice for the Cardinals today for the second straight day. Jordan Hicks is one of them. DeAndre Hopkins is another. We never really worry about Hop that much, but it's just something to kind of keep an eye on. Everybody else other than Tanner Vallejo was limited today in practice. Murph got back. Marco Wilson got back, as we talked about. For the Browns, the two positions to really keep an eye on, running back and tackle. For the second straight day, neither of their running backs practiced, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And for the second straight day, neither one of their starting offensive tackles practiced, Jack Conklin on the right side, Jedrick Wills on the left side. Neither one of them practiced.
Chubb has been great, right? They lead the NFL in most rushing categories because of that 1-2 punch of Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Chubb's got a calf injury. You do wonder if he's going to be 100% for this game, even with the injury. If he doesn't play, that's great news because that whole offense is predicated on their ability to run the football. So if you take that away, that's really going to hurt Cleveland. If Chubb doesn't play, I would lean towards the Cardinals winning. If he does play, I'd give a lean towards Cleveland winning. I think he's that much of a factor in this game. But he also could be limited, too. I mean, if he's not, if it's a calf injury, if it's bothering him and he's not able to play at a high level, that could benefit the Cardinals.
He doesn't have a sack yet. But J.J. Watt is still impacting the Cardinals' defense this season, and he's been doing it all while trying to adjust to a new role. We'll talk about that coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. J.J. Watt, if you're just going by the sacks, it hasn't been a successful signing for the Arizona Cardinals. The good news for us is that we've got a lot more data in front of us, and it's not just about the sacks. We've got numbers that back up it's not just about the sacks. We've got the eye test that tells us that's not just about the sacks. But let's hear from the guy himself, J.J. Watt. Is this what you expected when you signed here back in the offseason? Here's what he said.
I knew that there was a great opportunity here. And obviously after I signed here, there were obviously other additions that were made that are have been very impactful and very, very big additions for our team. But I knew based on what was here already that there was great opportunity. And everything that I've seen so far is what I expected. And I think that there's even been growth and maturity and improvement beyond what you could expect. So I think it's been great, and I think that our team works very well together. I think Cliff runs a great program. He's the same exact guy every single day. And I think every guy on this team comes in and works every day.
It's the chemistry capital of the world, Arizona. It's the chemistry capital of the world.
I mean,
the Cardinals, the Suns, the Mercury,
the Burns and Gambo show.
The chemistry's unreal.
I mean, it's just the love yeah. we all feel for each other.
This
on
is what
this
Earl
show.
Watson envisioned many, many years ago.
You
He's
know
ahead
what?
Of his time.
It might be that he kind of planted the seeds that
yes.
are growing right now.
You just got to all love each other and it'll all work.
That we're all feeling this is the runoff
Think
of
about it.
Earl Watson.
Chris Paul and J.J. Watt, newcomers.
Yeah.
Newcomers raving about how great everything is.
Culture and
chemistry and just everything's great. And boy, winning does a lot, man, huh? Winning's that secret sauce.
It's funny that I was thinking about that exact same thing, listening to J.J. Watt talk, thinking to myself that, well, what's he's got nothing to complain about. I mean, not that he would anyway.
He's got a two-year contract.
He's got a two-year contract. He's making a fortune. He's on the only 5-0 team in the NFL.
Yeah.
Even though he doesn't have a sack, so what? The eye test says he's still disrupting the opposing offense. He's got the numbers, and this is Pro Football Focus, but Watt currently leads all pass rushers in all the league in quarterback hits with 9. He trails only Rams defensive lineman Aaron Donald in total pressures, according to Pro Football Focus.
It only took 40 seconds for the Coyotes to give up a goal. That's it. It only took 40 seconds for them to be losing 1-0.
I was
watching that, and I thought to myself, I wonder if they'll give up a goal in the first minute. You're talking it. I'm watching it. They're down 1-0.
I'm no math whiz,
into the game.
But the Blue Jackets are on pace for 60 goals in this game.
they got to listen. The one day, their goalie's terrible. The Coyotes' goalie's just awful.
Well,
oh, my God.
It was five hole, right? So, right between his legs, I think. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's we all knew what we signed up for with the Coyotes this year. We all knew it was going to be a rough season, and they're on their way.
At least they're wearing the Kachina jerseys.
You know what?
Hey.
They look good. If you're going to lose,
look good.
At least look good. Look throwback. Look old school. And those Kachinas, they do look very good on the road. Here's Vance Joseph today. Again, with more questions about J.J. Watt. He said, look, Watt is getting better every week in our system.
I think J.J.'s played very well. You know, he hadn't played inside as a 3 technique and a 5 technique in about 4 years, you know. So, and he missed training camp, guys. You know, so missing training camp for Jay, even though he was in great shape when he came back, he wasn't in the system enough, you know, taking on blocks and doing those things that he's doing now, you know, as far as being a 4 technique or a 3 technique. He's getting better and better each week. Oh, this first week, it was okay against Tennessee. He made some plays, but it wasn't sharp. The second week, it was just, again, okay. But the third week, I think Jacksonville, he played really well. He played well against the Rams, had his best game Sunday. So I'm hoping he gets better and better once he figures out what to do within this system.
Look, I want to see him get 6, too. But it's not just about the sacks with J.J. Watt. Anybody who watches this game, anybody who saw what happened last week against San Francisco knows that J.J. Watt impacted that game. The fact that he didn't get to the quarterback is almost irrelevant. It's almost irrelevant. It almost didn't matter that he didn't get to the quarterback. He forced how many holding calls? He forced Trey Lance off his spot how many times? He had his fingerprints all over that game, and it doesn't matter to me that he didn't have a sack as long as the pressures are there, as long as the hurries are there, as long as the hits are there. That's all. I mean, really, that's all I care about. That pays for itself with J.J. Watt, as far as I'm concerned.
He's not the player that was the three-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year. He's not the guy that went to five Pro Bowls and led this league in sacks two times. But he is the team captain. That he's the same guy, the team captain. I mean, he's that leader. And listen, they were running, I mean, Frosty Rucker and Rodney Gunter and Josh Morrow. And I just think about all the guys, Robert Kimdichie, all the guys that they've lined up on the defensive line to try to, you know, give them something. And what they got with JJ is they got a leader. They got a guy who's going to give everything he has. He'll play a lot of snaps if you need him to. And he'll get the pressures. He'll get some quarterback hits. He had a great deflection 2 weeks ago in a game. Last week. So, like, he's going to make plays. But he's not going to be the guy that gets the 12 to 15 sacks anymore. That J.J. Watt is probably gone.
Along those lines, he was asked if it's been difficult for him to adapt to the interior of the defensive line as opposed to on the edge.
Not necessarily, because I know you know what it's going to be coming in. I mean, you know you're coming into a new situation and in a new environment. And even though I'm very familiar with the defense, as you play in it and as you work and see how everything works together, you get more and more comfortable. It's just the nature of it. So I don't think it's anything really that I didn't expect. But I do think that every single week as we go along, we get more and more comfortable, and I get better and better within the system.
And then as a follow-up to that, here's defensive coordinator Vance Joseph. If you do your job in this system, the plays just kind of come to you.
This system is really a system of just do your job, you know, and the plays will come to you. I think for so long in Houston, Jay was the main guy, so he took some chances. But, you know, with Chandler and Hixey out there with him and Zaven and Isaiah, we have plenty of playmakers, you know. So if guys just do their job and stay in their gaps and do it with selflessness, they're going to make plenty of plays, and that's what he's figuring out now. You know, if he can make a lot of plays, he's doing it right.
He had 45 pressures last year, and I think maybe the stat to look at with J.J. Watt is not sacks but pressures. He had 5 sacks last season, but he had 45 pressures, which is better than anybody in any Cardinal. No Cardinal had that many pressures. So I think that's really going to be the stat that I'll kind of consider more than
you
anything
else. You said 45,
else.
Right?
Last year he had 45
All
pressures.
Right. I mean, I'm looking at his and that's per Pro Football Focus. He's already got 23, so he's already halfway there.
Jeez.
To the total number of pressures. He's got 23 through five games. Okay, so quick math, guys. So basically
5, 10, 15, it'd be 20, 40, 69 would be, and then you had a few more for 2 more games.
Okay.
He's 69 through 15 games. You'd have 69.
Okay, his best year for pressures was in 2014 when he had a mind-numbing 119. Then the year before that, it was 85. If he ends up with 69, based off of Pro Football Focus's numbers, that would be his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th best year of his career. He would have had 5 seasons of more pressures than that.
And he's a good run defender.
If he maintains this current pace.
He's been a good run. You know what the key thing is, in all honesty? It's just that one of the questions I had when I got J.J. Watt is, can he stay healthy? Last year he played in all 16 games, but he had missed prior to that. He had gone through a stretch where he missed 32 games over 3 years. Missed a lot of games. So the question was, can he stay healthy? You know what? He's so far, knock on wood, he stayed healthy.
Knock on wood. We've been wondering all week how the Cardinals will replace the production of Max Williams, and it turns out we might have been looking in the wrong spot. We'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's get an update on our Twitter poll question today. We roll it out at 2:30 every day. We update it at 4:30. Turn it over to Jordan, get an idea what's going on with our poll question today.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Fits in very nicely with what we're talking about here in this segment.
Yeah, so with Max Williams out for the rest of this season, who do you think is most likely to get his targets, specifically this Sunday against the Cleveland Browns? Your options are Christian Kirk, Rondale Moore, Chase Edmonds, and Darrell Daniels.
I said Chase earlier. I don't feel great about it, though.
I went with Moore.
Yeah.
I went with more. Give me more.
He's the popular vote getter right now. 52% are voting for Rondale Moore. 27% for Christian Kirk, 12% for Chase Edmonds, and just 8% for the tight end that actually is replacing Max Williams, Darrell Daniels.
Yeah, this is the poll question you can find on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. Give us a follow while you're there if you want to play along with the show on social media.
Three straight drop back in trouble, flushed out, moving left. Fires it deep, left side, a jump ball. It's caught on the near sideline, but they say out of bounds. Boy, Rondell Moore, just a heck of a catch. Man, he was interfered with. I don't know how they didn't call pass interference. They ruled that Rondell Moore was out of bounds. Boy, did he catch it, though, Wolf?
Well, no, I thought he caught it, but I didn't think he tapped it off.
Look at his feet.
The ruling on the field has been changed to a catch.
What an incredible, I mean, you got it. That's as good as it gets.
Now, keep in mind, as we welcome you back to Burns and Gambo, the story that Gambo sent me today, sent us today, is sort of a fantasy-based conversation. I imagine it reads like a here's how to manage your fantasy team based off of what's going on with the Cardinals. But it brings up this concept, and it doesn't just have a fantasy application. It has a very football, real football application. They were breaking down wide receivers and tight ends, and they wrote this. It's possible that either Darrell Daniels or Demetrius Harris straight up replaces Williams. But the more likely scenario is enhanced usage of four wide receiver sets and thereby more of Rondell Moore. Don't expect the Cardinals to field another fantasy-relevant tight end in 2021. That last line to me suggests they were kind of writing about this from a fantasy perspective. But let's ignore that for a second.
Okay.
The more likely scenario is enhanced usage of four wide receiver sets, more Rondell Moore.
You know, and I've checked on this, like, hey, you know, from the Cardinals' perspective, and you're replacing a guy like Max, passing and block, where does that production come from? You know, I was led to believe it's more going to be a combination of guys, backs, and then the new tight ends. But it does, you do wonder if the percentage of four wide receiver sets goes up a little bit more. And not only because and I think a lot of it's just because of you got to find ways to get Rondell Moore on the field and get him more touches. You've talked about that for a little bit now. But with Max Williams out, you might be better suited going to some more four wide receiver sets to take advantage of that. Because as I continue to say, biggest mismatch in the NFL, third and fourth wide receivers, especially good ones like the Cardinals have against other teams, third and fourth cornerbacks. It's just those teams can't match up.
Look, the idea of getting Rondell the ball more than he's been getting it now, that was something that Cliff brought up on Sunday after the
he
game.
He needs to touch it probably more. He's dynamic, and every time he gets it, something good seems to happen. Tremendous catch on the sideline that really, led to points.
What's interesting about, at least what's interesting to me about the tight end and who's going to be on the field and things like that. So Max Williams gets hurt in the game against San Francisco, right?
Okay.
The tight end who got most of the snaps, it wasn't even Daniels. It was Demetrius Harris.
It was Harris, yeah.
Harris got 52% of the snaps in that game. And so nothing against Darrell Daniels, and maybe it ends up becoming more of a Darrell Daniels thing. But it was Demetrius Harris who got those snaps when Max Williams went out. It wasn't Darrell Daniels. Now, I'm just remembering why. Darrell Daniels was on the COVID list, so that's obviously why. So
yep, he's back now.
I forgot about that. So, okay, brain fart on the talk show host, and so now that he's back, how do you balance it between Daniels, between Demetrius Harris, between the new guys, or between a four-wide receiver set? It remains to be seen, but I do think Rondell Moore needs to get the ball in his hands more often, for sure.
He does. So you could increase, the amount of four wide receiver sets you go to and try to get Rondell Moore the ball a little bit. But you're almost saying we're going to throw the ball when you go to that four wide receiver set, right? You're almost saying you telegraphing it, hey, we're going to throw the ball. The thing about Max Williams that made him so special was that you had no idea whether they were going to run or they were going to pass when Max was on the field, because, you know, he can go out and catch a pass, he could release and catch one, or he could stay in. He was such a good blocker. Such a good blocker. And now, that's the thing. You lose that ability with him being that dual threat guy at tight end. Now, we'll see where they go. And I think that this is a gauge week for the Cardinals. I think this is the week they kind of gauge, okay, we don't have Max. What can we do? Let's see. Before we make a trade and do something, you know, giving up a big draft pick to go get somebody, can we survive without this? Is there ways to, we have so many talented players, is there a way to make this work? Now, yeah, Daniels is back this week after being out for the last, 3 weeks, was it? So you'll get him back. We'll see what he could do. You also made the have a guy in your practice squad now in Rodgers, Rashad Rodgers. That you have that you like, and you want to maybe give him an opportunity. You've got your backs you could throw the ball to. We've talked about throwing a ball more to Chase. You could go to Moore. There's a lot of options, and I don't know where they're going to go. I mean, I don't know, but I would really like to know on Monday just the difference. Were there more four wide receiver sets? How did they use the tight ends? Give me the percentage of the tight ends and how they were used, because look, they still want to run the ball with James and Chase, and you need a quality blocking tight end.
You got me looking up a whole bunch of stats here while we're doing this, because I'm just all these questions are kind of popping up into my mind, and I was curious. Passing attempts versus rushing attempts to look for the balance so far
through five games.
They have thrown the ball 165 times. They have run the ball 151 times.
I mean, come on, how much? You can't get more balanced than
that. That's pretty darn balanced for this team over the course of the year. It's not quite 50-50.
It's close enough.
It's really, really close. And so what made me think about it was you're going 10 personnel, you got four wide receivers on the field, you are basically saying we're throwing. And so how often do you want to do that when you've achieved a really nice level of run-pass balance so far throughout the season? And yet I can't help but thinking, and I looked this up earlier, Rondale Moore's only been on the field for about 40% of the snaps so far this season. I got to think that's going up. Christian Kirk's been on the field I think it was like 65% of the snaps. I got to think that's going up with no Max Williams.
I don't know that Rondale is taking snaps away from any of the other three guys to make his snaps go up. I think his snaps would go up because you don't have Max Williams anymore. I don't think you're looking at Rondale and say, you know what, we're going to give you Christian Kirk snaps. We're going to give you DeAndre Hopkins snaps. We're going to give you A.J. Green snaps. That's not going to happen. I don't see that happening. You know, what I see if Rondale Moore gets more snaps, it's because they want to go to more four wide receiver sets to get him more involved.
Yeah, right. I just wanted to look it up to make sure I got it right. Christian Kirk has been on the field for about 61% of the snaps so far this season. And then I was looking at Rondale Moore, who's been on the field. Yep, there it is. About 40% of the time so far. So how much does that go? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how they kind of attack this. But I like your thinking that before you go overreactive and before you go trading draft picks, see what you got. See what you got. You know, see on the roster, what can Darrell Daniels do? What can Demetrius Harris do? What can Cliff do?
Because right now you look like a desperate team calling somebody for a tight end.
Sure. Sure.
You know what? If you were able to win this game and guys play well, you might not seem so desperate.
Perhaps.
And maybe the price comes down on a player.
You can text us your thoughts on the state of the Cardinals roster. The FanDuel text line is open for you, 620-620 right now. If you get a chance and some time, we, as always, will read the best ones on the air here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. When we come back, ASU getting some early love when it comes to the expert picks for Saturday's game. With the game being such a toss-up, are people underselling Utah on Saturday night? We'll talk about that coming up. Burns and Gambo. Three out of the four experts on the Athletic website picked ASU over Utah. John Wilner, our good buddy, up there in
San Jose
Mercury News. Well, I'll tell you.
Who did he pick?
He's got ASU.
He's got ASU?
In fact,
he loves ASU.
He's got ASU as his five-star special this week
in
the Pac-12.
He's got a five-star special?
Apparently.
I didn't even know that.
He writes, the Sun Devils are the best team in the conference right now and only need to win the game outright to cover. We will take that. Believing that ASU is plenty physical enough to match Utah at the line of scrimmage, a veteran quarterback who won't get rattled in the bedlam of Rice Eccles, and has enough playmakers to generate quick strike, long distance touchdowns. Meanwhile, we haven't quite seen enough from quarterback Cam Rising to believe the Utes can keep pace for four quarters. He's got ASU beating Utah on Saturday night. If you have not heard us talk about this game up until this moment here on Burns and Gambo, understand that if ASU beats Utah on Saturday night, they are so totally, completely in the driver's seat in the Pac-12 South.
Yeah. Basically a two-game lead over everybody because they have the tiebreakers over UCLA. Look, UCLA, they got Washington this week, I think. So not an easy game for them, but they'd have basically a two-game lead over the two closest competitors, which would be Utah and UCLA. You'd have a two-game lead over them because you have the tiebreaker over each team you beat them. So, yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm just looking at the weather forecast. Saturday night, lows 39 degrees.
Okay, it's going to be chilly.
So 39 degrees, that's the low on Saturday night. So the high on the day is 60. So the high 60, the low is 39. Chilly. You know, you've talked about this. You know, when you go to Corvallis or you go to Salt Lake and you've got to play when the weather starts to change and get colder, that has sometimes been a thorn in the side of ASU football.
Yeah.
Having to play in conditions. As long as it's not rainy, it looks sunny right now.
And
so no rain.
And to clarify, that's what always concerned me about those trips to the Pacific Northwest in November. It's the wet. It's the rain, you know. It's the ability to hang on to the ball, to throw in the middle of rain like that. Cold, I don't worry so much about cold as I do the wet when I start looking at schedule like that. Kyle Whittingham, coach of Utah, saying, looking at ASU, I don't see very many weaknesses.
Good football team, first place in the Pac-12 South, 3-0. They're solid across the board. Quarterback is dynamic, very balanced on offense. Good running back, good receiving core. Offensive line is playing well. Defensively, they're playing well. And so there really is not any weakness that you can really pick apart. I mean, we got to play exceptional football this weekend, and it should be hopefully a great matchup.
ASU has the Pac-12's best scoring defense in terms of points per game, total defense in terms of yards per game. On offense, the Sun Devils are averaging about 7 yards per play. That is 11th in all of the FBS. We haven't really mentioned this as well. Utah perhaps dealing with some emotional turmoil.
Sure.
and some, you know, distractions, if you will. The death of cornerback Aaron Lowe. After beating USC on Saturday, they flew from Utah to Texas for Lowe's funeral services on Monday. Turn around, fly back, get ready for the game against ASU. I mean, these are resilient, semi-professional football players, but also understand there's a human element here to it. And when dealing with the death of a teammate like that, emotionally, you know, what are they bringing into the game with them and the level of distraction and things like that. So there's a lot to kind of factor into this game on Saturday
night. Yeah, there's no question. I mean, having to fly to Texas, you know, on Monday morning for Aaron Lowe's funeral and then fly home the same day and... You know, you're dealing with with the death of a teammate. I mean, it's obviously difficult times and everything. You know, they've responded in the past to tough adversity and, you know, put some closure on it a little bit with one of their teammates. But this is a big game for them too,
because
and maybe it motivates them.
That's,
I mean, maybe that motivates them to play well and to play for him and to win another game and to have a great season.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It can have just the opposite effect too. It can give you something to play for. It can give you something to dedicate a game to. Here's Kyle Whittingham believing that the funeral service provide closure for his players.
That was another positive thing about it is the closure aspect of it. Being able to have a service that was able to accomplish that.
I'm going to tell you the main reason why this game is making me nervous, though. Utah knows if they don't win on Saturday night, they're not winning the Pac-12 South. That's going to lead to a level of desperation that I think ASU is going to really have to match on Saturday. Because I think Utah is going to come out knowing full well everything that's on the line. It's you know, we say, hey, it's early in the season. Guess what? It's not early anymore. We're halfway home. The season is halfway done for ASU. It's no longer early. There's no longer time for you to be able to make up an early season loss because it's not early anymore. And I think for Utah, they're going to come out knowing full well everything is on the line for them in this game. And ASU's got to be prepared to match that. I think ASU's very capable of matching that. But just understand what Utah is going to be fighting for and what they're going to be playing for, because they know if they lose, they're screwed.
Yeah, it's tough to get behind a Utah quarterback because they've had so many bad ones over the year. But this rising, I really thought after the first game of the season that they were in a good spot with Charlie Brewer, just a really good spot. I mean, the Baylor transfer and, I mean, all the numbers that he put up, and it just didn't work out. He ended up getting benched. He left the program because he was a little bit of a sore loser. Rising came in, and Rising's been really good. So he's been terrific. But usually Utah's where quarterbacks go to die. You look at a guy like Brewer who's threw for like 10,000 yards. He goes to Utah and doesn't even make it out of a half a season. You know, they've had just so many quarterbacks over the years that just weren't any good. Now, this Rising kid is playing extremely well right now. But that was the case, I thought, last week with McKee in Stanford. He had been playing extremely well, hadn't thrown a pick. ASU picked the kid off three times.
Yeah.
He hadn't thrown an interception. He was playing great. He goes up against ASU's defense, and they pick him off three times. We'll have to see if ASU's defense can rise up against Rising the same way they did against McKee in Stanford.
This old-school offense that—and it's not totally old-school. I mean, Zach Hill— We saw some of the trickeration that he rolled out there against Stanford.
It was amazing.
Yeah,
two plays in a row that led to the touchdown. It was just unreal.
I don't want to make it sound like it's this, you know, pounding ground kind of offense where they're lining up in the I formation and you got a fullback and they're battering it like the way they did in the 80s. It's not old school like that, but it is old school in how much they rely on the running game. And that is the one thing we've said time and time again, whether you're going to Utah, whether you're going to Corvallis to take on Oregon State, Seattle to take on Washington, a team that runs the ball well, that travels really well. Defense travels really well.
Yeah, they had 255 yards and three touchdowns on the ground in that last week's game. I mean, it was and then you throw in, you know, you throw in the trick plays. I mean, consecutive trick plays went 54 yards. It culminated with that Elijah Badger 22-yard run. That was a reverse from White. And that gave him a touchdown. The first play was that double reverse flea flicker thing. Daniels hit Hodges for like a big play, but he originally handed it off to White. White flips it to Pearsall. Pearsall gives it back to Daniels. Daniels hits Hodges like, wow, that's impressive.
Some serious trickeration.
Zach Hill likes some of these. He throws in a few of these trick plays. I like it.
And then Gambo's favorite stat of the season
when it comes to ASU
football.
Yep.
ASU football, which has kicked off at 7 o'clock or later local time for the seventh time this year. ASU's played six games. This will be 7 for 7 when it comes to kicking off at 7 o'clock or later. But you know what? Isn't it kind of a badge of honor for ASU?
That they get the late game?
Well, I mean, for the West Coast audience... That's some serious primetime stuff right there.
Okay, let's talk about the chances of running the tables and being a team that gets considered for the playoffs. Wouldn't you want to play earlier so people could see you if you're really good?
I would hope the selection committee is staying up late to watch all games and not going to bed at 8 o'clock.
Some of those people are old, man.
I would hope when our dear friend Paula Bovin sat on that panel for years. She's not old. I would hope that she, being an Arizona resident, was encouraging the staff of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee to stay up late and watch all the games and not go to bed.
But just because ASU plays in the afternoon doesn't mean, like this week, that Georgia-Kentucky game, I believe that's a 1 o'clock start time here in Arizona. If you're playing an early afternoon game, you're going head-to-head with that. No one in SEC country, no one in the East is watching ASU in Utah. They're watching a top 25 SEC matchup.
I'm just saying you got to do your job and watch all the games if you're part of that selection
committee. Why didn't we get a Stoops brother that could turn a program around here in Arizona? Why did Kentucky get one of those guys? Hey, Kentucky's got a Stoops brother that's got them whole program turned around. We got a different Stoops.
Mike.
We got Mike.
So there's a Bob, a Mark, and a Mike, right?
Yeah.
In terms of the Stoops?
We got Mike. What the hell did he do when he was here?
That'd be like an NFL team getting Cooper Manning.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Kentucky gets the other Stoops brother, and they're freaking winning all these top 25 matchups. They're going to get slaughtered this week, though, by the way. Slaughtered.
Who, Arizona?
No, Kentucky.
Oh, I didn't know who we were talking about. I didn't know who.
Arizona gets slaughtered every week. I mean, that's just a given.
I was going to say that's an automatic, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, they've been over 2 years since they won a football game. Kentucky plays Georgia.
They're going to get slaughtered. Even though he coaches the Cardinals defense, Vance Joseph is keeping Kyler Murray in the back of his mind when thinking about playing the Browns this weekend. We'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo Show.